Welcome into the DNVR Rockies podcast brought to you by Strava Craft Coffee. Strava CBD coffee is enriched with CBD, and CBG is great for helping with chronic headaches, joint pains, IBS, so much more than that. And now you can get delivery every 2, 4, 6, 8 weeks, whatever you need. They've got it for you right at your doorstep. Get 25% off with code DNVR25 now with your first purchase at StravaCraftCoffee.com. I'm your host, Patrick Lyons, and joining me today, as he does every week, he's the host of the Drew Goodman Podcast. He's the voice of the Colorado Rockies on AT&T Sportsnet. And that was our amazing broadcaster roundtable with Mike Bryce, Kyle Kirchhoff. He's also available for holiday wishes and anniversaries over on Cameo.
There you go. There you go, man. It's How are you?
I didn't say your name here. I left people hanging. It's Drew Goodman. Hey, how you doing?
Yeah. Happy New Year, because we were before the New Year, were we not last week when we taped that?
It was during a crazy time in the world where there's a pandemic running rampant, and a lot of things have changed since we've last been together. I think everything's different now, right?
That's encouraging. That's great to hear. I love that. That's great.
We did get snow, which has been excellent. I know for those that go into the mountains and go skiing. Are you a big fan of snow as far as it comes to your property? Do you like being out in the snow? Do you like shoveling it?
Yeah, I don't. I like the snow. As you know, I'm a big skier. I've skied my whole life, and I love the change of seasons. We live in Colorado, for goodness sake, so you better like the snow. The ski industry, tourism in the winter months is tied to it. I'm not saying it's not nice to have, you know, lovely 55 degree days in the middle of winter, but it's also nice when it's January that it should look like winter. So that snowstorm, the recent one, was welcome. I mean, I want to see a white Christmas, and I like the snow. You know, I guess everything in what's that line I'm trying to think of?
Moderation.
Thank you. Everything in moderation, but I hope for powder days every single day up in the mountains.
Yeah, I do love that. I think, you know, where I grew up in New Jersey, they used to say, and I think it was even scientifically proven, that Ocean and Monmouth County in New Jersey had like the perfect mix of all four seasons. You know, like it wasn't too hot, wasn't too cold. And I think Colorado's like that too in a lot of ways. Obviously, it'll still snow in the springtime, and we've seen what that's been like at Coors Field at times. But you also have those winter days in which the sun is out and you still got to go outdoors, and it might be 35, 36 degrees, but you put a vest on and you still want to be outdoors and enjoy the environment and the weather. It's pretty good. It's a good combination of all four seasons.
I have often said that our weather is ideal, and that you and I both know, having grown up in the same part of the world in the Northeast, when it's 20 degrees in Colorado and it's 20 degrees in Jersey or in New York, where I'm from, you'd much rather be in Colorado, man, because that 20 degrees will go through you to the bones back east. But you know, without the humidity here, 20 degrees, like, put a sweatshirt on, let's go.
Yeah, no, it's great. We definitely can't complain about the weather out here in Colorado. We're very lucky. I love shoveling snow, so this is, I'm kind of in my own right now, going out, dusting off the car. I now have a snowblower, not to brag. So I just love going outside for an hour, 2 hours, runny nose, all that stuff. It's fun. I enjoy
it. It is, man.
I don't know why, but I love it.
You're being one with nature, and you're being productive, and you're getting some exercise in as well. It's all good.
We recently recorded an episode of the best of Colorado sports, you know, for the Denver sports podcast that we do here once a week on the DNVR Sports channel. And we were talking about the best moments for each of the major sports here in Denver. And for the Rockies, you know, I think there was, for, again, any season where you're not going to the postseason, it kind of seems like it falls flat. But there was a lot. There were a lot of good moments as far as games, as far as performances, and as far as the fan perspective when you think about the 2021 season.
There's always great moments. It's why we love sports. I mean, let's face it, only one team is, as I'm fond of saying, is the last one standing, and there's only one team that really celebrates at the end of the year in any sport. So you better enjoy certain games, certain moments, and even teams that don't have playoff caliber years are going to have their share of moments. And so it's good that you got to celebrate it, man. It's part of being a fan. It's a great catch. It's a walk-off home run in baseball. It's, you know, a phenomenal individual performance that you say, wow. And that's why we gravitate to sports, for the wow moments. Last night, man, watching the Avalanche and Gabe Landeskog had a hat trick, and none of the goals were get you out of your chair, but it was so fun to watch that first line skate. And then a couple of nights ago, speaking of wow moments, Cale Makar's goal in overtime was a wow moment. Now, we know the Avalanche are going to be in the postseason, and the Avalanche are trying to win a cup and have legitimate designs, as they did a year ago, on winning the cup. So they're not going to be an afterthought. But that individual performance back when you guys, you know, do your thing at DNVR with the Avalanche, you're going to point out that Cale Makar goal. It's going to be one of the highlight moments of the season, even if it does, as we all hope, end with a parade. That was a special evening, man. Special goal.
Amazing Deke. Yeah, for sure. You mentioned wow moment. I think the top two for the Rockies this past season is one on the offensive side, one on the pitching side. Ryan McMahon, of course, with three home runs. It happened so early on in the season. I almost think that it gets forgotten about a little bit. You know, it was an extra inning game. I think it was a Tuesday night, kind of cold, right after that Dodgers series. But on the pitching side, you got Herman Marquez with his near no-hitter against Pittsburgh. Is it not even close, or are they kind of 1A, 1B as far as wow moments and wow single-game performances?
There's always a buildup. For me, I'll defer to the pitching performance. We've seen guys have three homers in a game. It's amazing. It's, you know, there've been a lot of great players who hit a lot of home runs and never hit three in a game. So I'm not trying to dismiss what Rymac accomplished. Great moment. And you know, he hits one, guys hit home runs. He hits another, guys have two home run games, and then he hits a third. And it's like, man, what a day. Great. Awesome. And it's certainly worthy of conversation after the season. When a pitcher keeps getting three outs without giving up a hit, and you're marching later and later into a ball game, and especially when it's happening at Coors Field, there's a more dramatic buildup, if you will. And so I will generally gravitate toward that, even though it didn't end in a no-hitter. That performance really stood out. Not saying that Ryan McMahon's three homer performance didn't, but if I had to pick one, I would take the pitching performance.
12 walk-offs, obviously huge. I don't know if one necessarily stands out more than another. Obviously, collectively, that was exciting, especially anytime you went to a game at Coors Field. You're pretty sure that the Rockies were probably going to win. And again, when they're doing it in the final at-bat like that, it's amazing. Something that I recalled, and I know I'm never going to forget this, and hopefully you'll remember it. I know you're very much day-to-day kind of guy, and you've got to flush it. You've got a new day to prepare for. But tell me if this rings a bell. It was in 2020. It was during the pandemic season, so there's no fans in the ballpark. Pretty sure it was a Saturday night, and it was against the Angels. Mike Trout, I think, was hurt at the time, and Shohei hadn't done the Shohei things he did in 2021. Nevertheless, Charlie Blackmon steps to the plate, hits a walk-off grand slam, and 5 seconds after he touches home plate, Coors Field is dead. It's just crickets. You know, that I think that kind of underlines some of rather the best moment or the best aspect for Rockies fans this season was they got to be back in the ballpark.
I think that would be number one. And I bet you if you ask the players, poll the players, they'd say that too. Just having the energy in the ballpark, it's different for everyone involved. It's different for broadcasters. It's different when you run out of highlight and you go, oh my goodness, look at this. But there's no ambient audio. There's no nat sound, as we say in the business, natural sound. And for the players, they rely, they're super professional. They that's what they're paid to do. So they're going to stretch and lift and do all of their game day routines, getting ready to play at 6:40 in Denver or 7:05, wherever the heck they are, right? Regardless of if they're fans in the stands. But it makes a huge difference when they can draw on that energy, you know, on June 13th on a Tuesday evening in a maybe not the most sexy matchup, and it's game number 74, the crowd's huge. And the crowd also, we were talking about things building up to a crescendo. Well, look at, you know, a comeback, and then all of a sudden you have a winning run at second base and you get that walk-off hit. Well, the crowd's now alive. The crowd is all in. Maybe they're standing. And if you're standing in the batter's box, you feel that, as opposed to 2020 where, okay, I know it's a big moment because the winning run's on base and I'm standing here with the bat in my hand facing, you know, a big league closer, but the only people in the stands are like, you know, three security people. That's it.
Yeah, that's just so crazy to think back that we lived in a time. And as you said, the players would probably put fans coming back as this big thing. And what's is interesting is, you know, maybe 5-10 years, that's not necessarily going to be on the list. Like, we're not that we're going to take it for granted, but it's going to be like, oh, fans came back. Like, how important was that? We'll maybe even lose sight of that. I think in 10 years, we talk about big moments in America's history and how often we forget how important they were over time. And I think this is one of those things that in 10 years time, we won't realize the magnitude of missing fans and then having fans back. But right now, obviously we do understand that's so pivotal that can change the outcome of the game. In football, we see it with the 12th man all over the place. And that has to be, you know, one of the top things for any fan bases in 2021 was having fans back. And I think we'll still feel that way in 2022 because we're still in the middle of this pandemic.
I think we'll still feel it in 2022. And I would hope, Patrick, that even 5 or 10 years from now, as you suggest, that when it comes up, it won't be so far beyond people's quote unquote recent memory that they'll be able to appreciate, and players certainly who either watched it from, you know, they were in high school or they were in the minor leagues, or maybe obviously there'll still be players who experienced it as big leaguers and are still playing 5 or 10 years from now and say, hey, you never want to see that again. Because that was really hard, and so they're that much more appreciative of fandom overall.
Check out the best of 2021 from the Avalanche, Nuggets, Rams, Buffs, Broncos beat over on the DNVR.com. Now only 50 cents for your first month if you want to give it a shot. If you've already had a subscription, you've already been a member, or if you know you're going to love everything that we provide for you, your annual membership will get you a free shirt. You get a bigger beer when you're at the bar on the corner of Colfax and York, where there's appetizer discounts, drink specials from 3 to 6 each and every day, a members only Discord that allows you to not have to worry about politics or a-holes. It's a great way to make connections with some new folks and passionate sports fans like yourself if you sign up at thednvr.com today. Breckenridge Brewery is one of the big beers that we serve down at the bar because they're our official beer. They're also our official seltzer. It's the Good Company Hard Seltzer, now available, as I said, on the corner of Colfax, New York, at DNVR. You can pick it up, keep it in stock at your house, at King Supers, Costco, just about anywhere. They've got cool 15-can samplers, the tap pack for Number Rhyme Altapia, where you can stock up and keep your fridge locked and loaded. The cool thing that they're doing now, and they've been doing it through all of 2021 and very timely, has been donating profits to the National Parks Conservation Association this year to help with prevention of forest fires. They've even recently upped the amount that they are donating here, obviously in the wake of the Marshall Fire. Do want to mention that DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of the NFL. Well, guess what? We're in the final week, or we've already hit the final week, depending on when you might be listening to this. There's a good chance if you're getting to this by Monday, you know we got a national championship game going on. And DraftKings Sportsbook has an unbelievable offer to get all fans in on the action for this exciting time on the football calendar. Now, new customers can bet just $5 on any NFL team to win their game. Same thing with college football. If they do, you win $200 in free bets. Don't miss out on this action. DraftKings Sportsbook customers can also get in on the action with same-game parlays. This is where you have multiple bets in the same game for an even bigger payout. The more legs you add, the more money you can win. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable. Best of all, you can download and deposit your cash whenever you want. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code DNVR and new customers can bet just $5 on any football team, college or pro, to win $200 in free bets if they're victorious. That's promo code DNVR this week at DraftKings Sportsbook. Must be 21 or older, Colorado only, new customers only. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. Goody, I know you had Dave Logan on the podcast the last couple weeks. I know you kind of touched on the state of things, you know, at CU Boulder, up at CSU in Fort Collins. And hey, we got the national championship game going on. Any inklings as you're going Bulldogs, you're going Crimson Tide?
Yeah, I talked about that in my podcast at the kind of after part two with Dave. And I will summate it in this way. You don't bet against Tom Brady in the Super Bowl,
yeah,
or even on him getting there, even though he's 67 years old, and you don't bet against Nick Saban. And I know they just beat Georgia. I know Georgia's favored. I know Georgia had the more accomplished season. It's just hard to, as great as Georgia is, man, they're phenomenal. I mean, I think Kirby Smart's team's outstanding. They can score. They're the number one defense in the country. It's just, you just always think Saban's going to find a way, right? I know they've lost. I know Clemson beat them. But I just have a hard time, saying, nope, I think Georgia's going to win. I think it's going to be a great game. I think it'll be closer than the SEC championship, but I'll take the Tide.
You know, I think Georgia had the harder competition too in Michigan too. So that factors in. You know, that bodes well for them. Obviously, their talents and having getting upended so late in the season against Alabama. But
yeah, I will say this though, yeah. Patrick. I mean, both games were, the score certainly was one sided. In both games, you know, the best team won. I don't think, you know, if you ask anybody with Cincinnati or Michigan, I don't think they would argue that point. I thought Cincinnati gave Alabama more of a game ultimately than Michigan gave Georgia, quite honestly. And, you know, it was a 10-3 game until late in that first half with Cincinnati, and they allowed Bearcats allowed a big pass play. But I it's going to be fun. I love college football. Those two semifinal games were not great, but I think this national championship game will be very good.
It's going to be fun. Something ESPN is looking on doing and trying to create a little bit more fun is to create some kind of Manning cast of their own. Have you enjoyed that on Monday Night Football? Have you enjoyed Eli and Peyton going back and forth, the kind of this alternative broadcast and the way that the game is presented? Obviously, it's not, you know, in the classical sense of like what you do, but is that entertaining as a member of the audience when you flip those games on with the Manning brothers?
I haven't watched it every week, but I made a point of watching the entire Manning cast, if you will, this past week. And it was a compelling game because Ben Roethlisberger, who's had such a marvelous career, his last game at home. And so there was, you know, it was a neat storyline, if you will. And Pittsburgh, I'm a huge Mike Tomlin fan, staying in it. And they're going to, again, have another season where they didn't finish below 500, 15 years running with Tomlin. But I wanted to, I like Snoop. I wanted to see that. You had the commissioner on. You had Aaron Rodgers on. So there were big name guests. I find Peyton Manning really entertaining. I find Eli entertaining, and he takes his shots at Peyton. I think it's been, it's clearly been a big victory for ESPN. It's innovative. It's fun. It's making use of, people who have kind of, especially in the case of Peyton, we know what kind of quarterbacks both of those guys were, in particular Peyton. But, he's genuinely a funny, witty guy. And, you're taking advantage of that, not to mention you're learning even more football because, of their acumen and reading defenses. So I find it fascinating. And, I'm all in, man. I think it's great.
ESPN's trying to do that with baseball now. Alex Rodriguez, is now a part owner of the Minnesota Timberwolves, so doesn't necessarily want to commit each and every week to Sunday Night Baseball. So they've announced that crew as Carl Ravitch, Eduardo Perez, who I think does a great job, and David Cohn also does an amazing job. But they're also creating this alternative show that I think has tentatively been called K-Rod. No, not Francisco Rodriguez, but Michael K, A-Rod, Alex Rodriguez. They're going with K-Rod for this, you know, show, right? You might not be tuning into Sunday Night Baseball for the baseball game, but similar to the Manning cast, you know, maybe you want to tune in to watch the cast of characters and see who the guests are and see what kind of stories. And I think this could be something that really lightens up baseball and brings a little more relevance to it and gets people, you know, focused in on the talent of the game and get to appreciate baseball and attract some eyes that wouldn't typically be on it.
So A-Rod is going to do this periodically?
Yeah, about 10 to 12 weeks or 10 to 12 games they'll do it, which pretty much breaks down to, you know, twice a month. You know, the All-Star break could upset that. So they'll figure it out. If it's a huge success, you know, maybe they'll do it a little bit more. So I'm guessing like every other week, every 3 weeks, whatever it may be. And, you know, try to, you know, Michael Kay and Alex Rodriguez, obviously they have that New York Yankees connection with Kay calling games for the YES Network and on ESPN Radio for a while. Alex Rodriguez, obviously, you know, former New York Yankee. He's obviously had his troubles with getting along with teammates, opponents in the past. But I think those two could be, a pretty decent pair together. And we saw what A-Rod was like. It was great. I think it was 2019, early April of 2019. A-Rod and ESPN came. You might remember that when ESPN came down, Rockies were the Sunday night game against the Dodgers. And the stuff that he was able to, you know, film with Arenado, again, I think it helps that he was a third baseman. But I thought it was really interesting just how he was interested in Nolan. And overall, you know, I thought they did a good job. And I know he can be, you know, somewhat of a polarizing. He's a polarizing player, but I think he does a pretty decent job in the booth.
I've always thought he's done a good job in the booth, and that original quartet or grouping he was with on the Fox post-game show when it was originally, I think, Pete Rose, Frank Thomas, A-Rod, and I think I'm leaving somebody out.
David Ortiz.
It was Big Poppy. So I thought the most baseball knowledge that was disseminated from the four, you know, former players, the most compelling stuff, the most interesting stuff, and how it was presented, I would say A-Rod was by far the shining star of that group for me. I mean, listen, it's all subjective, right? And I know he's a polarizing figure, but I give ESPN, I know they had successes. We were just talking about with the Mannings, you know, different set of personalities. I give them a lot of credit, man. They're thinking outside the box, as we all try to do in the entertainment industry and how sports is presented. And it'll be, you know, be curious to see how it works out with Michael Kay, somebody that I know a little bit. I worked with many, many moons ago on, on Fox's coverage of the Super Bowl 1 year.
I thought you were going to say PIX.
No. I'm trying to go back to WPIX. But anyhow, so yeah, I'm good for them, and let's see how it turns out and how they massage it. And I think it's probably, given how baseball works, Patrick, the fact that they're not trying to do it every Sunday is probably a wise thing, where, you know, sometimes in smaller doses, it'll work. And, you know, off the top, you're trying to think, okay, you got to do it the same way. You got to have some interesting guests and some people that you're kind of doing an interview as the game is taking place. But, you know, the football, even though it's a 3+ hour deal, sometimes moves at a better pace. Things are happening, whereas, you know, baseball, it's a different pace, as we all know. But all in all, I'm for it, man. I want to see how that plays out.
It's always positive to have that kind of change. Just trying to do something different. I haven't really seen any negative feedback. You know, sure, again, there's plenty of people that probably like, I don't really want to see more of A-Rod. But if you're watching, if you're paying attention, you're right. His, you know, analysis is really good, which is probably surprising for a lot of people in numerous ways. Again, one, because, you know, he might not have been the most likable guy when he played, but he's, you know, when you get to see him as himself, you're like, actually, he's pretty likable. And I think he had a show on MSNBC where he was helping out, you know, former athletes, you know, who were, had some trouble investing some money, and again, was very likable on that. Was he on Shark Tank? He might have even been on Shark Tank for an episode.
I think he may have been. I never saw one of the episodes he was on there, but I think he was. Listen, he has eclectic interests.
Yeah.
He's been a guy that's moved well beyond sports. He'll always be tainted by how he handled the Balco situation. But he's a pretty sharp guy. And so, you know, I think whenever you have somebody that draws interest, draws attention, and he's a good looking guy, which, you know, it's television, right? They're going to be executives who say, hey, this may work. Let's hire him. This may work. Let's give him a shot in this capacity. And that's what you're seeing with A-Rod, who's really had a renaissance when you consider how his name was dragged through the mud, whatever it was, 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah, renaissance is probably a good word to describe it. You know, again, he's mingling and dating celebrities. So, you know, he's very much almost like a modern day Joe DiMaggio, I guess, if you probably, him and Jeter too, in many ways. So I think that's, hey, if you've got that going for you, if you're Major League Baseball and you have those kind of figures, you got to take advantage of those opportunities. And going back to him having, you know, really good analysis, that's been one of the reasons why, if you look down the list of Hall of Famers, you know, great athletes, a lot of them never transitioned into coaching because some of their ability was, you know, very much natural. And it's hard to explain that. Can you, you know, share what it's like? Because you've had your share of former ball players, you know, as co-hosts in the booth, and they've all done an amazing job. Have you noticed they have to like work at being able to explain what they're seeing? Because it's one thing to do it, but then to have to try to articulate what's happening, and that's a totally different skill set for someone transitioning from the action and being a part of the game to now going behind the scenes and providing that color analysis.
Well, I think anybody in any sport that becomes an analyst on a sport, the prerequisite, it's a given that they were a great player,
yeah,
right? Because we know their name and they reach the highest level of whatever the sport is. So it's a given that they had a lot of ability. It's probably a given that they worked hard. It certainly would, you'd assume it's a given that they understand, you know, technical aspects of, you know, how something is performed, whether it's hitting a baseball, pitching a baseball, quarterback play, lineman play. When we think of our friend Mark Schlereth and that sort of thing, that's a given. Now, being able to articulate it in a way that people can comprehend it, that's a different skill set. It's why not every great player can be a coach. It's why not every, you know, great player can be a broadcaster. So that those are two different skill sets. It's why, and this is up your alley, Patrick, because you have a teaching background. I've often said this, that you could have somebody who has a Nobel Prize in physics, and you have somebody else who has, you know, a college degree and majored in, you know, took a few science courses and has a little bit of background in physics, but can teach, you know, high school physics and be able to help kids understand elementary physics, if there is such a thing as elementary physics, better than somebody who has a Nobel Prize in physics, who's obviously on a completely different level than that high school teacher, because they may not be able to communicate what they know in a fashion that is understandable. So they're different skill sets.
Yeah, to your point, again, talking about, you know, incredibly smart people, you know, Dr. Michio Kaku and Neil deGrasse Tyson. You may have heard of Neil deGrasse Tyson because he's a guy who can boil down outer space, you know, in a broad sense. I can't even really talk about it. I'm not a big science guy, but Neil deGrasse Tyson is a guy who you hear him talk about black holes and the Earth's atmosphere and planets and all that stuff, and you have somewhat of an idea. you know, what he's saying, because he can boil it down a little bit. That's an incredibly hard skill, as you said, to be able to describe what it is that's going on, you know, behind the scenes. And Houston does a great job of it. Corey Sullivan, Ryan Spielborgs, to name a couple folks behind the scenes. Who was the first guy that was in the booth that you had as a former player? Obviously
George Frazier.
George Frazier. Yeah.
George played.
He was just before my time.
Yeah, no. George played. You know, I'm trying to think. Better, more than a decade in the big leagues. He was on two World Series teams. He lost his World Series with the Yankees. In fact, he lost three games in that World Series. You know, coming out of the bullpen. You know, and I know people point out he's the only guy to lose three, or he's one of the only guys to lose three games. But guess what? When you're good and they keep calling on you, that's why you keep getting the baseball. George won in his last year. He won a world championship with the Twins in 87. So, you know, George had a really fine career, primarily as a setup man.
Yeah, there are tons of people who would kill to lose a game in the World Series. If you have to, yeah, you'd be feel very lucky to have that opportunity to, like you said, even be in there, be a part of that mix. And so, yeah, he got the ring. I forgot. He didn't show it off in the booth as much as maybe he should have, his World Series ring. I think that would have gone a lot further.
It's funny. We're talking about George. I talked to him last night for a while. And I think all of those guys, one of the things they all share in common, and they also pass this along to other players that aspire to get into broadcasting at the conclusion of their careers, is don't forget how hard a game it is. Don't forget how difficult a game it is, because sometimes in the comforts of the booth, you know, where you're watching from a distance and you're not grinding every day, trying to play the game, trying to have success, going through those, you know, tough nights or tough stretches where you can't buy a hit, where you make a couple of errors and now you don't want the ball hit to you. I mean, it is agonizing. We've often talked about how tough a game this is mentally. I was working with my middle son's home, you know, going, getting ready for his spring season in college, and a very close family friend of mine whose son plays at James Madison is in town for a couple of days. And I was working out with them this afternoon and throwing to them. And I told my friend's kid, I said, you had a couple of days last season that personifies baseball. He had a day where he punched out five times in a game, which is one more than the Golden Sombrero, right?
Platinum.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't even know. And the next day, I don't mean 2 days later, I'm not embellishing this story. He on a Friday night in a college baseball game, he struck out five times. On Saturday, he hit three homers in the very next game. That's baseball. And so the reason I'm telling you that is that guys like Spilly and Huey and Frazier, when they came up, when other guys were talking about, boy, I'd love to do television, whatever, and that the first piece of advice they give is don't forget how tough a game it is. You know, you have to watch it with a critical eye, and if, you know, if a team's not playing well, or if a player should have made a particular play, certainly you are obligated to say that, but don't forget that it is really difficult.
Between this and the broadcasters roundtable, we've got the Drew Goodman masterclass on being a broadcaster. It's true. I mean, you've got a lot of experience, you've got a lot of really good advice. So we've got a great partner too here at the DNVR.com, and that's Ball Aerospace and Technology. They're doing what they can, and they're hiring right now. They're looking for production technicians. They're going to start you off very competitive, $27 an hour, with increase at 6, 12, and 18 months. There's potential for an annual bonus. You get comprehensive insurance, active the day of hire, stock purchase ownership program, 401k for retirement. It really is a great way to be taken care of by a great company like Ball. If you're interested, text Golden to 77222. That's it, just the word Golden, and they'll get you linked to open positions. You can also go to jobs.ball.com and search for Golden. That's jobs.ball.com and search for Golden. Your Colorado rugby team is back again, but now they are the American Raptors. If you haven't heard of the American Raptors, they're a top-notch group of athletes who've already competed at the highest level of their respective sports. We're talking wrestling, baseball, soccer, track and field, football, basketball, you name it. Our guy Colton Strickler is covering it all for you on his weekly DNVR Rugby podcast, so make sure you subscribe to that today. You get to learn more about rugby with Colton's 101 Rugby podcasts that include exclusive interviews with athletes and coaches, plus the DNVR Rugby podcast provides betting advice on the Super Rugby that starts at the end of February, right when football season finishes. How nice is that? You can head over to AmericanRaptors.com to score your free tickets. Yes, free. Or if you just want to stream their games, all that and more can be found at AmericanRaptors.com. Well, one of the topics in the news, and we're certainly going to ramp up our coverage here at DNVR Rockies, is the Hall of Fame. The announcement's coming, I think, January 25th. It's a Tuesday. One of the discussions going on in baseball right now is the idea that these Hall of Fame trackers, maybe you're aware of it, maybe not. Ryan Thibodeau does it on Twitter, at not Mr. Tibbs. He, tracks all of the public ballots that are available. He'll track how many votes a player got that he didn't get previously, right? Hey, he was added on this many ballots. He was taken off this many ballots. We'll get an idea what the percentage is so far. We also have an idea what happens to the non-public ballots that, we won't get until, I think, a couple weeks after the announcement is made. And so it gives you an idea, instead of there just being complete secrecy and complete unknown about where someone like Todd Helton, of course, who we care the most about, or David Ortiz, we have a general idea where they're sitting right now. And even if you say maybe it'll be a little higher, maybe it'll be a little bit lower, we'll have a general idea who might be getting in, who still has a long way to go. And so the conversation is this a good thing to maybe know this much of what's going on behind the scenes as it comes to the next class for the Baseball Hall of Fame?
I think it's a natural evolution of things. We know a lot more about how the sausage is made in a lot of different areas, right? Yeah. So the fact that most voters reveal their ballot and are open about discussing it, even the ones that probably we don't agree with, or in some cases anger us, the blank ballot, for instance, that a couple of baseball writers have submitted. I saw where John Morosi, J.P. Morosi, who I have immense respect for, submitted his today, and he was having a public conversation. John's been on my show, on my podcast in the past. He's such a bright guy, and he's a great baseball guy. He's a good hockey guy as well. And he didn't have Helton on there. He had Mark Burley, for instance, but I think it's good because it opens up further conversations about the sport we love. It keeps it relevant in the off season. And the fact that we do have a better idea of who may get in, that's fine. Again, it's the natural evolution of things. We're not going to do, just because we did something one way doesn't mean that in perpetuity that's how it's going to be done. And I find it exciting from where we sit, Patrick, that we're seeing that there's truly the upswing in votes continues for Todd Helton. I mentioned it on my podcast. I think it, better than I would, but when I taped the other day, I think he was plus 11. Is that about right, Patrick, from a year ago?
Definitely in the ballpark, yeah.
Yeah, so, now he's trending toward, last year was 45%. Maybe he's going to come in around 55%, which tells you that one day we're going to be celebrating his induction into the Hall of Fame. We know there's some prominent names that could drop off the ballot next year, and those guys are generally tied to the, the PED era. So I guess long-winded answer, as I'm prone to have, but I don't mind it at all. I think by and large, it's a good thing.
Yeah, for any element that it may reduce the suspense, right, because we have a general idea who's close, who's not. Okay, Todd was probably going to have to wait at least another year, so it kind of reduces the suspense. There are umpteen more reasons for why this is positive. Number one being the conversation, right? Now, each ballot is a podium for better or worse. And so many writers have acknowledged the fact that, look, this is a responsibility. and that you've got to deal with. And there's going to be criticism. So you got to explain yourself. You got to do your homework. It's no longer, look, I've earned this spot. I've earned this vote. Here's who I check off. I don't really have to answer to anybody. That's changing. You know, you've got to justify why you voted for someone. You got to do your homework, right? Maybe you didn't like someone, or you didn't notice somebody because they played on the West Coast, or you're a West Coast guy and they played on the East Coast. But now, because of the conversation, it's forcing people to go and look at a guy like Todd Helton and say, he was in two postseasons. All right. He was okay. He was never the best first baseman for 5 to 10 years. Well, yeah, he played at the same time as Albert Pujols. It's forcing him to go back and look at the numbers and realize the impact that guys like him had. And so that conversation, I think, in the grand scheme of things, is definitely way better than us just not knowing and then opening up the newspaper the day after the announcement's made. And here's who's in, here's who wasn't.
Yeah, and you know, take Larry Walker. Even though we had an idea that it was going to be very close, you didn't know until it was official. So there was still, drama.
Yes.
There without. I mean, I remember that day, as I know you do very well. I mean, it's going to be close. I mean, it's one way or the other, and fortunately, it fell the right way. So there was still some mystery to that one, and the guys that there is real no mystery attached to, you know, that going in, you know, when Rivera was on the ballot for the first time, when Derek Jeter was on the ballot for the first time, there was no drama there. So there seems to be more guys that are heavily debated. And I think certainly in the case of people like Todd Helton, there's more intensive homework done on those players, on all players, but particularly on ones that have been attached to Denver. I mean, there's only two right now, right? That are Hall of Fame potentially worthy. So, and I don't mind it. Overall, I don't mind it at all. I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, I think it's great because, as I said, it's forcing people to dig back into the numbers and really give a much more fair shake to it. The thing that is not great that needs to change is the 10-player limit. The goal of voting on the Hall of Fame should be, is this guy a Hall of Famer or not? Rather than, is this guy one of the best 10 Hall of Famers? Because now they're obviously, you're bouncing back and forth where, I'm not going to give my vote to Helton this year because Schilling, Bonds, Clemens, it's in their last year. Hey, let me give it to them. Or let me give it to Mark Teixeira, even though I think Helton's a Hall of Famer. Teixeira, not so much, but I want Teixeira to stay on the ballot because, you know, currently he's in and around the 5% mark, and you got to get 5% to stay on the ballot. So now you're not voting for Todd Helton because you're worried about the other ramifications. I think that limit to 10 really muddies the water and probably has gotten us to where we're at today, where these, you know, slam dunk, whether you're opposed to the PED conversation and whatnot, Curt Schilling is almost more confounding because he doesn't have the PED. Asterisk tied to him like Clemens and Bonds, but yet all of those guys are hanging around, and for every single vote that they've gotten, there's a chance that someone else could have gotten that vote, you know, just as well, and changed the course of their Hall of Fame trajectory.
Yeah, I don't have an issue with being able to vote for more than 10 based on the point you're making. I would like to see the voting body expanded, and I say this and people can say, well, it's for selfish reasons, and I know I've espoused this forthcoming opinion on prior podcasts with you, and that is they should extend it to people like myself who broadcast and see 162 games, because there's a lot of people in the Baseball Writers Association that don't see every game, don't have to really focus on every pitch. So I would like to see it expanded. If you really want to, see it, a true grouping of people that intensely follow the game and, have a feel for, just not saying writers don't, but a feel for, who is worthy of being in that grouping, that select few that are all-time greats.
Coming up this week, I had a very long conversation. In fact, it'll probably bleed into two episodes. We talked for about 2 hours. A young gentleman by the name of Justin Wick, who's been on the show before, writes for Purple Row, does an amazing job, worked the Arizona Fall League this last year for the communications department. And we sat down, we did a lot of homework, and we tried to predict the future of baseball in the next 25 years. And we'll briefly talk about some of those things now. But one of the things that I touched on, and it was part of my prediction, in 25 years' time, announcers, English, Spanish, if we get Mandarin broadcasters here in the booth at some point, if you've served your 10 years' time and you're at the ballpark every single day, which we know announcers are, you should get a vote. And so I think that's something that will change if we take a much bigger view than just 10 years, 15 years, 25 years down the line. I think that is something that will change. And I think it's something that very well should change.
I hope so. And I know it sounds very, selfishly motivated, but I know that, my brethren, see and have to, based on what we do, literally focus on every pitch. And I'm not saying that writers don't. Writers bust their butt, and I have great respect for print journalism and anything that promotes the game of baseball, covers the game of baseball. I have no issue with, but I'd like to see basically the voting body expanded to include another set of eyes that are there on a daily basis.
One of the new rules that is going to be on its way here, I think the technology is a little bit behind right now, but the automated strike zone, I think we've probably touched on this in previous podcasts. What has been your take on that? As far as, how much is it needed? Is it going to improve the quality of gameplay? Is that a huge thing that should be at the top of changes that the game really needs to have here in the next, certainly 25 years, but in the next 5 to 10 years, do we need that ABS system, the automatic ball strike system?
For me, no. For me, absolutely not, because I have such great respect and admiration for catchers. It is the most important defensive position in the sport. There's an art to catching. It has evolved greatly through the years. This game is played by human beings. Every sport is officiated by human beings. And I know we get replay help in all the sports now, all the major sports. I don't want it to be where there's just a guy back there and strike was a ball. I mean, that's ridiculous to me. And it takes away, again, from the art form of catching. There's a lot of good receivers. I'll give you an example. With the Dodgers, this goes back about 3 years ago. And the Dodgers rolled into Colorado late in the season. And we were talking about, it was still when they had Yasmani Grandal. And they had Austin Barnes. That was their tandem behind the plate. Now, Yasmani Grandal is a guy that typically is going to hit 20 plus home runs. And I think he did that year for the Dodgers. And he's a real threat offensively. His metrics, and it's one of the problems I have with certain defensive metrics, his framing metrics were really good at that point in time. I was talking to Oral Hershiser, who is one of the all-time, he's one of the greats, right? And he's a broadcaster for the Dodgers. And he said, guys don't like throwing to him. He goes, he boxes a lot of pitches. I know what the metrics say, but I'm telling you, guys prefer to throw to Austin Barnes. Well, sure enough, look up that postseason. Austin Barnes, who's not nearly the offensive player that Yasmani Grandal is, Austin Barnes was behind the plate the majority of the time, not Yasmani Grandal in the postseason. And so I bring that out to underscore again how important that position is defensively. And also, so you have a strike zone, and it's going to be an automated strike zone. To me, it's going to be clunky, number one. Number two, human beings are going to formulate what that strike zone is on each given hitter, right? What if they adjust their stance? What if, remember how Raimel Tapia used to crouch down with two strikes? How are you going to adjust it? Because this pitch right here may have been a strike when he got to the plate and it was an 0-0 count. Now with two strikes in his crouch, that's, at nose level, it's not a strike. So there's going to be as many people going, what are you kidding me? The buzzer went off on that. That shouldn't have been a strike. I don't like it, man. I don't like it. I have no problem when we go to replay and you overturn something because a tag wasn't applied or the tag was applied before the foot hit the bag. I got no issue with that. But now we're trying to make something perfect. It's not perfect. It's a sport played by human beings. There are going to be errors. We use the term error in baseball. It's a part of the game. Just like a missed call, even though it upsets us as a fan, and you hear us bitch about it as broadcasters every once in a while, it's part of the damn game. And we also have established now through other metrics, Patrick, that these guys, by and large, get it right, you know, 94, 95, 96% of the time.
That's surprising to a lot of people when they hear that number, too. That's damn good. Yeah.
You know, Clint Hurdle is one of my favorite lines. One of Clint Hurdle's many good lines and apropos lines in life and certainly in sport is, you know what the enemy of good is? Great. These guys are really good at what they do. Do they miss calls? Yeah. But the enemy of good is great. So we're going to take this. We're going to make it perfect. Ain't going to be perfect, even if there's an automated umpire. So in my typical soapbox fashion, Patrick, I'm out on it. But I hear it's coming.
Yeah, I feel very much the same way. I think it'll also be something, too, where after a certain period of time, we'll just get used to it, and you might not necessarily notice it. Like a lot of changes with baseball, at least, kind of like the protective netting. Everyone was, you know, up in arms about, oh, my view, and I got a good seat, and the netting's going to be in the way, and you kind of forget that it's there. That happened pretty quickly. So, yes, it's on its way. It's the technology, I think, is further away than we probably realize. I don't necessarily feel I don't need to have the automated strike zone. I don't, but okay. If it's coming, that's fine. I could go either way. It would be nice for it to stay there. I do worry about the negative impact at the lower levels of the game, because now, you know, again, if the majors is this perfect strike zone, let's say if they can get it right, the technology's eventually going to be there and it's just always perfect. Great. What does that mean down in the minors? And what does that mean financially for some of those smaller towns? And okay, maybe those stadiums can afford it, but what about in Division I baseball or Division II? And what does it mean in your local little league, where now no one wants to play because, you know, a human umpire called a strike that was really a ball, and now this guy's maybe, you know, getting chased out of town because people don't know how to deal with that kind of human error. And, you know, maybe that's small potatoes in the grand scheme of things, but yeah, it's it happens. You miss a call, it happens.
Yeah, and it becomes the lore. It becomes part of the tapestry of baseball, just like, you know, Don Denkinger and you know, Jim Joyce with the Armando Galarraga, you know, should have been perfect game. It's okay. It's okay. Life is not perfect. Sport is not perfect. We're all fallible. I want to see the game continued to be officiated behind the plate by umpires. I'd like to see I've changed my opinion on certain things or become more staunch on certain opinions with the game on changing it and the evolution of the game and making it more appealing to everyone, particularly the younger generations. We do have to pick up the pace, and I have no issue with that. I used to be, oh, you pitch clock. Well, you know what? If there's a pitch clock and you don't get to pitch toward home plate in 20 seconds and you call a ball, I'm okay with that. I really am. There are other things like look at hockey and how much fun it is in overtime in the NHL during the regular season when it's 3-on-3 hockey and the Avalanche can put out, you know, McKinnon, McCarr, and Rantanen. You know, who the hell wants to try to defend those three guys, right? And it's a lot of fun, and it's a way that they can produce a second point in hockey, right, for the winner of that 3-on-3. I would say in baseball, why not leave in the regular season the California tiebreaker rule?
I like it. Yeah,
I like it, man. There's different strategy. I think some. I know for a fact. I don't think that there's some managers who are dead set against it that actually came to say, "Hey, this is interesting. This is different. A lot of decisions to make." And keep it in the regular season. We're talking about taking bullets, you know, trying to alleviate all the pressure and the injuries on pitching staffs, right? So why are we playing a 15, 16 inning game in June and May and, right? Do that for the 162. Obviously, you get to the postseason, just like in the NHL, it's 5-on-5 hockey. Postseason is if you get, you're not going to, you got to earn your guy at second base, your guy in scoring position.
And you got to earn the quicker ending too, right? Hey, if the team that's in the other bracket that won the division series, you know, won their game, great. They, you know, should reap the rewards of the winner of the other division series having to have consecutive 14 inning games and now their bullpen is wiped. Well, okay, that's an advantage you should have. So yeah, you get rid of it for the postseason. I'm in favor of that. I did want to say for the college football conversation, you know, they had the Pinstripe Bowl, Maryland won over Virginia Tech. They had 29,000 folks at Yankee Stadium. Virginia Tech, I think, even had helmets that had the interlocking NY logo of the Yankees. Do you think Coors Field would be a good venue for a college football game, for a bowl game? Would you like to see something like that? Could that work?
Well, listen, Coors Field's such a beautiful facility with the mountains in the background and how well kept it's been. And, it, you know, I think people in baseball who follow realize, wow, it's already the third oldest stadium in the National League behind Wrigley Field and Dodger Stadium. But it's so well kept and it's immaculate. We know that for concerts, it's been great. We've seen the Winter Classic there with the Avalanche participating. I don't see any reason in the world why it wouldn't be a really cool venue to watch a college football game. So, I mean, that would be my short answer to that. I will say this, though. Like, when it's at Fenway or Wrigley, there's a mystique, even, I guess, with Yankee Stadium. But those stadiums are set up for baseball, so you're still going to be limited on more prime seats because you have to jerry-rig a 100-yard football field in there. And I guess as I think this question through, though overall, yeah, I mean, Coors Field would be a great venue for a ton of things, right? If I'm going to go watch football, I'd like to watch it in a football facility, and I'm not going to gravitate toward a game just because it's at Wrigley Field. And I know they used to play there years ago, the Bears did, but I may go, oh, let me check this out. Wow, you know, there's a dead ivy, and they're playing football, and okay, and I watch a little bit. But if I wasn't really drawn to it by the two teams competing, I don't know how long I would hang in there. So it'd kind of be like fly-by television. Now, if it's the national championship game, it's Alabama and Georgia, you know, I don't care if they're playing, you know, on the street out in front of my house here. I'm going to be in, right?
Yeah, they'd have a Nerf football if they're out on the street. But as you said, Coors Field, yeah, third oldest in the NL now. I mean, I don't know if mystique is the word about it, but it's iconic. It's an iconic baseball cathedral now at this point. And I think it could be host to a bowl game. Right. Yeah. I don't know how that works. If you know, you say, all right, well, if you're one game under 500, you know, we'll have the Coors Field Bowl, whatever it might be called. But for one game a year, I mean, even if we are talking about two 500, you know, quality teams, it would be nice to get back into Coors Field, you know, one more time since you haven't been there since late September. You know, there's not going to be a game until April. I think people, you know, again, it's Denver. I think people would come, you know, to a game like that. I think you could get 25,000 to see Navy against Texas A&M or something like that.
Texas A&M would not be pleased if they're playing, with all due respect to the Naval Academy, in a game. They're aspiring to be in the Final Four every year and playing in front of 100,000 people. But I understand you're using that as an example. Yeah, I mean, who knows down the road? Listen, do you have any bowl games are worth this year?
Probably 25.
You're off slightly, 42.
Yeah,
There were 42
scheduled. I can't keep track anymore.
Yeah, COVID got a couple of them, but there were 42 scheduled, which means 84 teams went bowling, which means if you ain't going bowling, you've got some work to do.
Well, that's the state of CSU right now.
But I'm excited about where CSU is.
Yes.
That's topic for another day. CSU, with Jay Norvell's hiring, and they have more excitement for what, you know, more excitement in December and January for Colorado State football since, you know, Sonny Lubick was running around the sidelines there and producing great teams every fall.
And the basketball team's top 25. Can you remember the last time?
Top 20.
They're ranked 20, yeah. Can you remember? It's similar to the Mets and Yankees, where New York is a Yankees town. Like, they own it. And there was that period of time in 2015 when the Mets snuck into the postseason, went to the World Series, Matt Harvey mania. And it didn't last very long, where the Mets kind of owned New York City. When was the last time that CSU had such a stronghold in Division One sports in Colorado over CU Boulder, pretty much like they do right now?
Well, you know, initially when they rekindled the rivalry in football, Patrick, and they were playing every year at, you know, in Denver in front of, and first of all, when people go poo-pooed it, that people didn't care, there were 75,000-76,000
yes.
people at all those games.
It's a
and
big
half
deal.
Were in green and gold and half were in black. And it was awesome, man. I went to a number of them. There, yeah. It was tremendous. And I think CSU won three of the first five or something along those lines. And, you know, CSU was probably in a little better position now. Both programs have fallen on hard times. So I know a few years ago, CSU won 10 with Jim McElwain. You know, you go back to when they were really relevant, you know, on a national level when Sonny was there and they were in the top 20, you know, periodically back then. In terms of basketball, which you reference, Nico Medved has done a phenomenal job. He's a phenomenal guy. He's a guy that you'd want your kids to play for, you'd want to play for. And basketball's different. You can, you know, it's not like you're putting together a football roster. So if you get a couple of star-level players and fill in around them and you have a good culture, you can be a prominent team. Like, they're in the top 20. They're going to have a tough one tomorrow. They're going to San Diego State because Boise, you know, is dealing with some COVID issues. So on short notice, they're going to go there, and that's going to be a hell of a test. They're unbeaten right now. But his program is really good with Isaiah Stevens, who's one of the top point guards in the country, and David Roddy, who's one of the top players in the country, and then a bunch of other guys that are really solid. It's exciting, man. I've had him on the podcast. You know, I do a bunch of Tad Boyle's games. I think the absolute world of Tad. And I sound like a PR firm here, but go up and watch a young CU basketball team and go up and watch an outstanding Colorado State basketball team if you get some time. Both are deserving of your interest, of your dollars, of your time. Both two really good coaches and running really good programs.
You mentioned David Roddy. He's on the DNVR roster. You can get a David Roddy t-shirt now at dnvrlocker.com. Are we going to be seeing Mr. Jay Norvell hearing him on the Drew Goodman podcast in the upcoming weeks and months? And if not, who have we got this week?
You know, I aspire to get Jay on. I'm gonna go to work on that. I can't announce yet.
No surprise.
It's going to be a surprise because it's going to be a surprise right now for me. I'm working on a couple of things, and you do mention Coach Norvell, and I do hope to get him on here in the not too distant future. And I had a great time talking to Dave the last 2 weeks. He's an old friend, and you know, Dave's a legend in these parts, not just for what a great athlete he was in high school coaching. He's a marvelous broadcaster, but you know, Dave doesn't shy away from opinions. And for those, we were talking about CU, for CU football fans, I think you'll be, you know, some of his thoughts on where they are right now are eye opening. So, you know, there's my shameless plug for the old Drew Goodman podcast.
Yeah, no, Logan's great. You know, obviously a great career in the NFL's wide receiver. So he's well known around these parts. So it's a good companion piece. If you don't already subscribe, make sure you do. You can listen to last week's episode, this week's episode, go back to back. It'll kill some time when you're on the treadmill or if you're shoveling that snow.
That's right. Hey, Patrick, before we get on out of here, and I don't know if I've asked you this before, and I know you grew up in Jersey and you haven't been here as long. You know, you've heard about Dave's exploits. Dave was drafted in three sports, the three major, with all due respect to hockey, football, basketball, baseball. He was drafted in all three sports. There's only one other guy. Did we talk about this?
No, but I know that would be Dave Winfield.
Dave Winfield's the other guy.
Yeah, University of Minnesota.
That. Yeah, Dave went to the Reds out of high school as a shortstop slash pitcher. And then the Kansas City Kings in basketball, because he was an all Big Eight basketball player. And obviously the Cleveland Browns in the NFL.
I did not know he was drafted by the Reds.
He was drafted out of high school by the Reds.
Okay. Yeah. Obviously he's the Padre guy there with Ozzie Smith. Yeah, that's a big one. And then I think the only guy to be drafted in baseball and hockey, you know that one?
Tom Glavine,
that's right. Yeah. Yeah, very good. We got a couple of basketball.
You know the head coach of Northeastern University in the Colonial Athletic Conference and a very good baseball program is? Do you have any idea?
His brother, Mike Glavine?
Ding, ding, ding. Mike
that
Glavine.
That was a guess. That was a guess because we were on topic.
We were on topic.
Dueling trivia. I gotta throw one back at you now. We'll just have to call that a friendly draw. And you know what? I'd forgotten that his brother played. I just recently saw his name and I was like, oh, look at that. He played with the Mets too. Mike, he had very brief, a big league career, but
yeah.
Okay. Yeah. LA Kings is that's who, Glavine was drafted by, I believe.
Yeah. Pretty good athletes.
Good stuff. Goody. Make sure you're checking out the Drew Goodman podcast each and every week. Drops Thursday morning. We drop every morning, Monday through Friday at 5 a.m. bright and early for you here on the old YouTube and iTunes podcast dial. Make sure you're subscribing to the dnvr.com now, 50 cents for your first month. Great coverage for Avs, Nuggets, Broncos, Buffs, Rams, and yeah, the Rockies. Follow me at Patrick D. Lyons and at @DNVR_Rockies. My guest is at Drew Goodman 42. So for DNVR Sports, he's Drew Goodman. I'm Patrick Lyons. And as they say, momentum is only as good as tomorrow's podcast. So we'll talk to you then. The folks at Green Mountain Dental Group deserve to take some credit for all of those smiling Colorado sports fans we have around town, especially our DNVR listeners who've switched to Green Mountain Dental Group over the years to make them their permanent family dentist. They're the best damn family-owned dentist in the metro area, and they're extreme Colorado sports fans just like all of us. So schedule a cleaning, x-ray, and exam to receive a free Sonicare toothbrush. That's Green Mountain Dental Group, located only 15 minutes from downtown Denver.